the subject of the 12 level of consciousness, which not to be confused with the 12 dimensions, right? Consciousness is all about you. So why should we examine a level of consciousness? Because we evolve through life, through different stages. And just like humanity evolves through those different stages, it represents, it's represented on a smaller scale in our daily lives. So we're not cavemen anymore, lucky for us, but things had to happen for us to evolve, yes? In a perfect world, we would be able to attain full consciousness in our lifetime. And the world being what it is, our imperfect lives sprinkle us with distraction and also our ignorance, right? There's things we just don't know about. And our very human nature gets us sidetracked and blocked at different times. So just a reminder that you can participate and you can ask questions as we are live. So I will answer them as I go along. If you're watching this after the fact, you can post your questions and then I will answer them as they come along. So remember that all the level of consciousness in this format, in this presentation, are the state of consciousness experience while incarnated in the physical body. And they're through different compilation. I decided to go with my background. I studied in psychology at University of Montreal. And those are organized by linking the physical, emotional, and mental states of our physical evolution, which explains then further on how we will get perhaps wounded and block our own selves. The progress, we differentiate progress through the different stages, and we can see how we can maybe build impeding blocks as we are going through our physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual growth. And also what we carry from past lives of unresolved learning and issues. Now, Jean Piaget, which was lived from 1896 to 1990, developed a theory of cognitive development. That means that you can only learn so many things or perceive so many things because your evolution is not quite there yet. He cited a model of intellectual development that prevented a child from understanding certain concepts at a certain age. For each stage of development, the child will change its perspective and its view of reality, depending on the different age of periods, which is why we create some blocks while we're going through our lives. The ultimate effect is affecting our view of the world, depending on what has happened to us in the past. Carl Jung is also someone we refer to in this podcast because he played a great role in his work in the field of psychology, psychiatry, anthropology, archaeology, literature, philosophy, and religious studies. He developed different theories in regards to the human collective subconsciousness and the differentiation of ourselves out of the conscious and subconscious element in ourselves. He said, until you make the conscious unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. So, in other words, you get onto a bus. And this happened to me once. I got on the bus and I got on the wrong bus and I was not going in the direction I wanted. But I'm not the one who's driving the bus. So I either can go in the absolutely wrong direction or have to get off the bus, retract my step, and then get on the right bus. Which is what the purpose of this podcast and this video on YouTube and Facebook is all about, is recognizing, are you driving your own vehicle or are you just on a bus on the road to somewhere you don't want to go? And so you need to be able to also not just be driving the vehicle, but also recognize and do a little bit of research as to, is there detours, is there road construction, in order to arrive at your destination safe and sound. I just came back from Vancouver recently and I was driving and it was a detour and that added an extra hour and a half to my drive. That was completely unavoidable, but that's what happens in our lives sometimes, right? We are wanting to go in a certain direction and we realize, oh, I can't go there because I don't have what it takes to get across this barrier, so I need to go the long way around. Carl Jung developed the concept of synchronicity, archetypes, and collective unconsciousness, which means that what is happening to us is also affected by what's happening to the world and the communities around us. Now, a guy that I really like to mention in these podcasts is Bard T. Spalding, because he wrote extensively about his spiritual experience. He published his book in 1924, The Life and Teaching of the Master of the Far East, in which he describes his travel to India and Tibet with another party of 11 other scientists. And during their trip, they claimed to have contacted the great master of the Himalayas, immortal beings with whom they live and studied, and gaining insight to the life and the spiritual messages. This is important. They're immortal, right? So when we get to the higher level of consciousness, 11 and 12, we can change things in the fact that we are still alive, but we no longer require this physical body that age and decays. This close contact enabled them to witness many of the miracles that Buddha experienced and was talking about. And the important thing about Spalding is that he says that these acts can be accomplished by anyone who comes to know their true self. And we'll be talking about walking on water or manifesting bread for the hungry. So despite most of the action taking place in India, the great master's book makes it clear that the greatest embodiment of the enlightenment state refers to as a Christ consciousness. So we're going to be mixing a little bit of different philosophies or ways of thinking, or in order to explain that basically Spalding says the masters accept that Buddha represents the way to enlightenment, but they clearly say that this enlightenment is the Christ consciousness. Now, we're not talking about Jesus being the Christ. Christ was the embodiment of this light. We're talking about this light called Christ consciousness. It's a little bit different. So this is all about spiritual evolution. And Manly P. Hall wrote the books, The Secret Teaching of All Ages. And he writes about all this research. This man was outrageously curious and had access to documents that are either unable to access to in our time now, or that require special diplomas now to access to these documents. But he describes several schools of thought and philosophy and teaching in regards to the human's purpose and evolution. And he described that we're much more than simple humans, and that throughout history, there's been many organizations trying to teach us the way to enlightenment and inner peace. As one of those would be the mystery schools, right? So he examines different aspects of different mystery schools around the world. And then we have Ken Wilber. Now, he's known for his very wordy discourse. Some people really like that. And in The Brief History of Everything, he joins together the evolution theory of the body, the mind, and the heart, and the soul to give us a more complete picture of all that can go wrong in creating false beliefs, self-sabotage, and how we can get stuck in our own personal evolution. I see a lot of people in one-on-one sessions, and they often tell me, I know this. I know I should do better, but why do I keep sabotaging myself? And the answer lies in the wounds that occur at the lower level of consciousness. So Ken Wilber also says that our evolution will be affected by culture, country, belief system, religious, economic, or social development. And then we have Joseph Campbell. He worked in comparative mythology and comparative religion, and he created the model of a hero. What does a real hero have to go through in order to be a hero and not just a sidekick, right? And this is how your story would evolve for your development to make sense. Now, this model can be applied to our lives, and you can be the hero of your own story. And this is important, because you no longer need to be the victim, right? Because if you're a victim, you're not the hero. You're waiting for someone else to rescue you. And through the ages, that's something that's been enforced, right? To be the victim and having someone else come and rescue you, which is the complete opposite of what needs to take place. So in one of the two-day class that I teach, in the very short summary, is I teach you that you're a soul living on Earth as part of a great experiment, and that this experiment started a long, long time ago. When the Earth went through several stages, one of those stages, we had the less denser bodies than we have now. And this physical form did allow us to experiment, right? Our senses. But at the same time, we still retain this connection to Creator and the rest of the universe. But it's like going to an indoor skydiving, right? You're inside the building, you're jumping, and the air is pushing you, and you have an impression of floating. But you're deluding yourself if you're thinking that that's the same thing as jumping out of an actual airplane and parachuting down, because there's the factor of the experience, including that you're 10,000 feet in the air, maybe you shoot one open, you have not as much control as what happens inside the building, right? So in that system, a long time ago, a group that was incarnated on Earth decided, because they had the ability to co-create at this time, which we still do, but less evident as it was then, to create themselves with denser bodies. And with the denser body, their sensation became more intense. And so they could intensely feel sensation, emotions, and touch, and smells, and, you know, taste. And so in doing so, however, we also cut ourselves off from the universe, and becoming caught in this reincarnation cycle, because now we're trapping ourselves in karma and in creating detachment from Creator. So as we lose touch with the universal love of Creator, we are stuck in this third dimension, forgetting a lot of the things that we knew. And now we have to learn these things all over again. We're not left by ourselves, however, and we receive teachings from now who can be addressed as ascended masters. But there's also a number of people that have opened the door to the other side and are able to connect to a greater, higher knowing, such as Edgar Cayce, Crayon, Adam, or Kardec. They bring us information that there's more than the physical life, and that we're also responsible for what we're creating. And therefore, we are the hero, and it's time for us to remember that. The Huna Principle, the spiritual Hawaiian teachings, tell us one important, very important fact, that we must take responsibility for our actions. So you had a fight with someone, and you go back, and the first is, it's their fault, right? They caused this, and so I reacted. However, if you ask yourself why, can you really blame this other person? Because let's say, for example, can you blame your ex-spouse for something? I can't, because I could have left at any time I wanted to. It's the fear that kept me much longer than I should have. But I need to take responsibility for the fact that I stayed. And because I stayed, a series of events occurred. Now, can I really be mad about that? It was my lack of courage that is to blame, not the other person. And if we go back far enough, I'm the one who said yes when I was asked to marry him. I could have said no. And that's what taking responsibility is all about. It's realizing that we created this situation. And although we created something, we can uncreate it or return to a place where this is where you get off the bus, you backtrack, and you get on the bus that you actually wanted to go in the first place. So I decided my hero wasn't doing so great, and I needed to make changes through my acts, my thoughts, and what I said in order to be the hero once again. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that there's no work involved. Yes, and I've been saying this over and over. You need to have this personal work, this introspection, this inner search. You need to take responsibility. This doesn't happen overnight. However, it is possible to achieve, and there are certain ways to get there. This is one of those talks that explains to you, maybe to help you realize that you have a flat tire, and what do you need to fix the flat tire, okay? So I started digging my own life experience, and that led me to accept the different choices that I've made. And then I had to go back and furthermore and asking myself, well, why did I put myself in that situation? What is it about me that thought that this was okay? Because obviously I wasn't realizing this was a bad arrangement, right? We get in all sorts of situations. We accept to work on jobs and we put money ahead of ourselves, or we put different things instead of us in the first seat. And that's when we do those things, they come from fears, they come from wounds that we've either self-inflicted or were inflicted upon us. But at this point, we are now old enough and responsible enough to be able to look at this and say, this needs to change. So I had to realize that I had developed beliefs that were hindering me rather than helping me. And I needed to know which beliefs needed to be changed. And why did I, in the first place, develop this belief about myself? I wanted to write a new story for myself. I can't change what happened. It's happened. And we live in the third dimension in a very linear time. So we have to agree that these things happen and it can't be changed. But what can change is if you're going to still be a victim to those events or you're going to be empowered by those events. And so I realized that before I could start writing a new story, I needed to find things like courage. I needed to find things like self-esteem or love of myself. I've heard someone say recently, coming to the realization that, you know what, I've never loved myself. And so I did all these things because I didn't love me. And I wanted to be loved so much that I put myself in situations that were harmful. The first step is to now realizing this, which is a huge opening in consciousness. And then being able to say, okay, now what do I do to learn? How do I love myself? Because they've never done that in their lifetime. This is brand new to them. It's a period of learning and growth, which is good. Those things aren't bad. They're actually a good thing because they're allowing you to move further. So in the 12 level of consciousness, we're going to start exploring the first five and see how much time we have left, how many questions are coming up. But they're split into mostly your physical, emotional, mental development, which I will explain how this creates wounds, right? Through my personal example. But the stage one is from the womb, because what you're experiencing in the womb of your mother will affect you because you were affected. We're all made of energy, right? So if the mother has incredible fear or high anxiety, this is transporting energetically to the baby, right? Through the different hormones that are being released because of stress or fear or anxiety, they pass through the baby. And so when you're born, you already come out with a level of anxiety or fear that is pre-existent to you even being in this world. So the womb to 18 months is a huge part. The stage two is 18 months to 4 years old. And then 4 years to 7 years. Again, those age are based on psychology, on psychometry and all these things, right? Because our bodies have the ability to transform at that age. Stage four is 7 to 14. And then stage five is 14 and up. Now, the wounds. The first three stage of consciousness are pre-personal, meaning that you're still building who you are. And the second three stage, so 4, 5, and 6, are about personal. So they're about you and your relationship to the world. And then the higher levels are transpersonals, which means it's outside of yourself and realizing that you're no longer separated from the world, but you're more part, an embedded part of this massive, massive energy. It's critical to note that if you're wounded or traumatized at any stage of development, you may develop a wound that impedes your future progress. And since you're unable to develop completely at each stage, a piece of you is kind of left behind or unable to contribute to the whole, which is where at a certain point, that's when things start breaking down because you can't go any further. It's like going to school and they're like, oh, we'll push them in grade two, we'll push them to grade three. And then you get to grade five and you're missing so much important stuff that you're unable to comprehend this concept being taught to you because you haven't grasped the previous concept properly. And so now you're at a stage where nothing makes sense anymore. Well, it's the same thing about your consciousness level, right? If you become self-fixated at any stage of consciousness, you will maybe develop some personality disorders or mental disorders. Yes. So we're talking about narcissism and other types of mental illness that are the trauma or the wound is so big that you're unable to move forward into the next stage. You are stuck there. And so the evolution stops. Does that mean that you can't fix it? The earlier that you are stuck, completely stuck, the harder it is. But for the general population, we keep moving forward with some wounds, but we're still able to make it to up to a certain stage. But the more wounds that you have, the bigger the wounds, the more shaky of a foundation are you building yourself upon. And so that in order to build the higher stages, sometimes you need to stop, look back, rebuild your foundation in order to continue growing. So it doesn't mean that if you are presently feeling stuck because you're burnt out or you're depressed or you're having some large issues that prevent you from continuing in your life, which has happened to me in the past. It just means that you need to take the time to reflect. Your soul is giving you, the universe is giving you this time. It says, okay, you can't work, you stay at home, but you have to deal with it. You can't just be watching TV all day long and expecting to get better. Yes, that makes no sense. You need to start asking yourself, why am I here? What brought me to this point? What exactly took place that I'm now unable to move and continue forward? So this is the goal of therapy, but also spiritual technique as meditation and prayer. But you kind of have to look at both to help the personality or yourself to heal those wounds, right? For a lot of people, I find that they're terrified of looking back because they think they're going to find these incredible big monsters, right? But it's like the shadow on the wall. You think it's a big monstrous thing, but it's just the angle of the light on a mouse. It's not that big, but it's terrifying because it happened so long ago. It's part of our ego protecting us in a way. And then we'll preach on all of that tonight. So, although we are going to physically age, we usually won't stop our growing. We won't stop our body from maturing. We can remain at lesser stage of development. And the lesser stage, which the earliest stage, the 1 through 5, it depends a great deal on our physical environment and what we went through this stage. If you were surrounded by a very healthy and nurturing adults at home and at school, who have actually passed through this stage in a healthy, fashionable way, you will most likely continue to through your development. However, if very painful thing happens at these stages, you might become psychologically crippled and your development is then impeded. This is regardless of how intelligent you are. You can be very, very smart, but emotionally undeveloped. So let's look closely at stage one, the womb from 18 months. This is where your stage of consciousness is existence, right? So I'm not even sure if you're completely aware that you're existing, but you know that something is happening. The baby cannot differentiate the bottle from his hand. He doesn't know that the bottle has to be brought to him. Right, there are things that is outside, completely outside of their control. Freud would describe this as it's a period of urges and impulses. Right, we are hungry, we are cold, we are wet, we are uncomfortable, or we're happy and we're sleeping. Yes, our need is strictly related to self-preservation. So we need to be fed, we need to be warm, we need to be sheltered. But we also need to be loved. Let's not forget that. Yes. So if our needs are not met psychologically, an individual will develop personality disorder at this stage. And the first stage being all about physical need, which happened from the womb to 18 months, your need for self-preservation must be met. Yes. This isn't a problem if you outgrow this stage or not. You know, Your needs must be met, period. And this is why we need mothers or caregivers to take care of babies. Yes, because 18 months, they're still quite small. I was able personally to recall an incident. There's a technique that can be used to track back your wombs and go find your emotions. And I saw myself, I was about 16 months, maybe 15 months. And I was going towards my mother and I had something in my hand. And again, you know, I want to show this magnificent thing that I found. And this could be an eraser or it could be a pencil, right? I'm 18 months and I've just discovered this object, or 16 months. And I want to show my mother, and she pushed me. Now, what I can recall of this scenario is that she was standing at the sink. So either she was doing dishes or maybe she was emptying hot water from the potatoes she just boiled. But I don't know, because I'm 16 months and I'm really small. And that is not part of my ability to think and process through. And so I go back again asking my mother for attention. And this time I hear her yelling and pushing me aside. But from my 16-month-old perspective, I don't understand why this is going on, because this is really important. And what's important is my world. And I go back again, and this time I get pushed and I actually fall. What happens, though, inside of me is that the first wound of rejection is created. And this rejection is, I remember the feeling of it. It felt like if I was made of glass, I was shattered into a million pieces, and it really, really hurt. And so I carry this rejection wound now inside of me, and it's going to be affecting my behavior as I grow older, because this wound exists. And in order not to ever feel this pain again, I develop a behavior that I am kind to everyone, avoid conflict, always say yes, and bend over backwards for people to love me and accept me, because I know how bad it hurts to be rejected. Now, if I look at it at the time that I did, decades later, I'm able to say, okay, well, maybe she was holding something very hot. She didn't want me to get burned. And so because it was in her hands, she had nowhere to put it. And she was in process of, you know, emptying the hot water. And in order to protect me, she did that. But the 16-month-old me was unable to understand that. And that's how the wound is created, right? Your level of consciousness doesn't have this awareness that you have as an adult. So that's the shadow, the big pain that my subconscious is trying to protect me from. And then me going around the corner and realizing it was just a little mouse. So I wasn't truly rejected, but that is what the wound looks like inside of me. And after that, because of that, it fastens a way of me interacting with the rest of the world to avoid the situation, right? So that's how wounds can be created. And that's why the developmental age and our understanding of the world affects the creation of these wounds, and why it's possibly not that bad to look at, because now we are understanding more as adults and our view of the world has changed. So we're able to deal with this rejection, understand it, and let it go. And then that's changing our way that we then interact with other people. Yes. Now, in stage two, 18 months to 4 years is technically a very selfish age. So anyone who has children will say, yeah, they just want to do what they want to do. They all of a sudden learn the word no. And then it's just when they want, and they don't understand why they can't still have everything they wanted. Well, because when they were babies, they couldn't get dressed by themselves. We had to do everything for them. They couldn't feed themselves. And then now, as they're growing, a part of educating children is to say, well, you know, you're not the king of the world. And unfortunately, we're not your maids or servant. And you can do this by yourself now. Giving small tasks in order to promote the child into a growing, eventually adult that is responsible. Right? Who takes care of things that they can take care of. So our order, we're still at this point, you know, fixated on ourselves, but it's not yet being narcissistic. Now, what's the difference between egocentric, which is 18 months to 4 years old, and narcissic. A narcissic is a person who, in their wounding at this stage, was so critical that they retain this selfish behavior way past the age of four. And everything becomes about them and their self-gratification. Whereas having a wound that is not critical allows us to continue. But you know, we may develop interpersonal problems, but not to the point of being a narcissic. Now, the ego is built to as a need to protect the fragile identity that we're trying to establish, right? We're starting to realize, okay, so not everybody is my servant, not everybody is my maid, not everybody can be the one to respond to all my needs. Maybe there are things that I can do for myself, so who am I? And this evolution occurs, and the ego is there as the armor to defend this growing personality, and builds defense mechanism and orchestrates behaviors to avoid any painful incidents from repeating, or from the wound from enlarging, or for the pain to continue. Because every time you experience the wounds for the first time, you're inexperienced, and then the ego builds up a protection after. So, it's also at a time where, age-wise, a lot of children who are still stuck with their past life will remember their past lives. And certain children can relate to their past life in great detail. And dreams can be helpful at any stage to throw light on an issue. But the dreams, the symbols mean different things at different stage, but they're also very unique to each individual. And it's best to try and interpret the symbols of the dream that you're receiving from your own perspective and your own personal experience. I did a podcast on that a few weeks ago, so if that interests you, you can watch that. In my case, I kept having dreams in German, and I kept having dreams about being in this different country and meeting different people and doing different things. A collection of dreams that I wrote down in a book for over 20 years came to fruition when it became clear that these weren't just dreams. They were about this past life that I had. And I literally redreamed my entire past life, segment by segment. And I had a knowing that this happened in Hamburg. So I flew to Hamburg this spring, and I confirmed that the images that I saw in those dreams were actually from Hamburg. And that allowed me to open up this old backpack that came from a past life and look into it and clear. There was a lot of fear. I was a swing kid, meaning that I was kind of a rebel. And swing kids were really popular in Hamburg, and I liked going dancing. So it wasn't about drugs or high crime or anything. It was just about trying to enjoy life and dancing to music that was banned in Germany at the Second World War. And one of the visions I had was very clearly seeing a church that was bombed in Hamburg. And while I was visiting, this church has not been rebuilt. So it looks exactly the same as in my dream when I come upon this church that's completely destroyed. I'm able to confirm a lot of the information and realizing, okay, so now what is in that backpack from that past life? What did I bring? And it was confusion and fear, uncertainty, and a lot of other things that I could finally clear out of this backpack, because they don't belong even in this life. They belong to this past life that I carried over. So this is also a stage where 18 months to 4 years old, the children will remember their past life. And a lot of people are saying, oh, you're so imaginative. And where do you get those stories? It's important to write those down in as many detail as they'll provide you. There's been certain incidents where the past life, they remembered their name. My name was Sophia in that past life. They remember the location. They remember who they were married to. They remember where they lived. And they were able to confirm this information. So, and it's something that is hard to accept in the Western culture. Whereas in Tibet, the Dalai Lamas are the reincarnation of the child's a reincarnation of a previous Dalai Lama, right? So, for them, it's a matter of factly to remember your past life. So, different perspective, different culture, different environment. We sometimes welcome the knowledge and sometimes we're apprehensive because we don't understand it. Ignorance, according to Buddha, is one of the greatest issues that prevents our enlightenment. Because of this ignorance, we don't know the truth. And so we push back the details that could be very helpful. So the people in the second stage of consciousness have a magical worldview, and they believe that inanimated objects or animals can talk and can feel. Now, this is coming from the psychiatry thing. If you're asking me, animals do speak. An animated object like a crystal has a consciousness. So maybe we're closer to the truth, but we're being told it's your imagination. When I was young, I could see my grandmother who had passed away come and talk to me very clearly, and I could see other people as well. And so luckily for me, I was never told that it was all my imagination. So I was continuing to believe that it was perfectly fine and real. But I get a lot of people who are afraid about these incidents in their life, and they shut the door and they don't want to see anymore. They don't want to hear anymore. So I don't think it's so much of a magical worldview, but in a sense more that things happen and without explanation, because we think, oh, they're too young to understand. They don't know what we're talking about. They don't need an explanation for this. We create different false beliefs. For example, my brother was 18, so that made me 4, 5. And he was 18, so my mother packed his thing, threw everything in a garbage bag, and, you know, told him whatever. However, no one is explaining to me what's going on. I have no clue what's happening. And so I'm all of a sudden coming home. I'm not allowed to say his name anymore. He doesn't exist, and everything about him has disappeared. This magical thinking was, for me, thinking, oh, okay, so mom is able to eliminate you completely. She's able to make you disappear, and no one will ever remember who you are and talk about you. So at that stage, I developed incredible fears and became obsessive compulsive, because I didn't know what did he do to be eliminated, and how do I not do the same thing, because I'd like to live and not be eliminated. And it created an immense confusion inside of me. And so it's only a few months later, almost a year later, that I got a birthday card in the mail from him, and I said, oh, he's alive? And my mother's saying, of course he's alive. And I'm like, well, I thought he was dead. But the fear of being eliminated, this fear of being possibly disappearing overnight, stayed with me. And so that made me, the obsessive compulsiveness, it then completely leave. It wasn't as bad after the fact that I found that my brother was still alive, but it was still present. So in time of crisis, these fears tend to pop to the surface, and that's now who's driving the bus instead of me. Yes? So a lot of people are joining us. So if you have questions, please don't hesitate. Now, at stage three, we have the three parts that Freud decides that, have developed, and they must merge together. And so we have the one where it was all impulses and meet my needs, which is called the id, and then the ego. And now we have the superego, representing the aspect of, okay, I'm internalizing rules and standards and understanding I may have needs, but now it may not be the best time. And so I'm the merging of these three aspects of who you are is supposed to help you function in society, right? You're supposed to learn there's a time to get up, there's a time to eat, there's a time to sleep, there's a time to interrupt, there's a time to wait for your turn. You begin school, you learn that to speak, you have to raise your hand, right? You're learning these simple society rules. Like someone gives you something, you're supposed to say thank you. You arrive somewhere, you're supposed to say hi. You leave, you're supposed to say bye. These sound like very, very innocuous incidents because you're like, well, yeah, obviously. But there was a time where we had to learn these behaviors, and that's the stage three. So at this stage, you start developing your mind. So now it's not just about the survival in your physical aspect. You start using your head, right? You're starting to say, okay, wait, I just arrived somewhere. I don't say bye, I say hi. Someone just gave me something, or someone asked me a question. It's my turn to reply. Now I can speak, right? So the child is able to use also his ability to create a mythical world, right? So this is where myths are so fantastic to grab children's attention and to trying to teach them through those stories, because they will believe that as true. So you don't have to convince them. They want to believe the story you're telling them. You're still thinking about yourself, but now you're starting to turn yourself towards the world, right? So you are at this stage working on your solar plexus. You're working on who you are and what you like, what you don't like. Unlike when you were two, you would scream at the top of your lungs, no, now you can explain, well, I don't like it. When I eat that, it makes my skin itch. Oh, okay. Or, you know, we start being able to say more than just be reactive. We're using our speech, right? 4 to 7. And we're starting to be able to explain things. Now, a lack of integration of this stage is could be you grow up with inhibitions, anxiety, obsessions, guilt, depression. So there's not just a one size fits all for each of these stages. There's multiple things that can happen if you're not integrating this stage particularly well. And at any stage of development, you can make choices to, within your limit, of course, stay where you are, de-evolved, or move forward. Now, I've worked in daycares for many years, and there was a time where some children, I've learned to speak, I've learned to walk, and then there's a baby that comes in the picture, and now they're acting like babies, right? Parents would have observed this phenomenon. And so they're all of a sudden thinking, okay, so I'm going to revert to being a baby and they'll take care of me and they'll give me attention. And, you know, and this is the area where you tell them, no, you're the big brother. So you're not the baby, you're the big brother. And the big brother can do this and we can do this together, because the baby can't do that, but we can, right? As a healthy promotion of moving forward instead of moving backwards. And so then we move to stage 4. And stage 4 is from 7 to 14 years old. Now, ever wonder why it's so important to make friends at school? Because it's the normal part of your development in a society. You realize you're not the king of the rock anymore, and you have to mingle. But everybody else in the same class or same group or same sports team is also realizing they're not the king of the world. And that's where some people want to still be the king of the world. So you have these people who are, you know, trying to impose their will and may become bullies, or they don't get to be themselves when they're homes, or they're trying to take over all the space when they're not. It's a time where you need to mingle and be a part of something else, because you realize it's your rock is pretty small and being king of the rock doesn't give you much. However, that's when collaborations start. That's when exchange start. And you realize in collaboration, there's more. It's more profitable than if you're just alone by your lonesome. And so this is society, right? We went from living in small groups to living in a community. We realize there's more strength in numbers. There's less chances of someone doing invading you or stealing everything you have if you're protected and surrounded by a community. We, in our development, need to be fitting into this group. And this can possibly create fear of abandonment. But then again, you can be abandoned at any age. Someone who was given up as a baby for adoption will feel the wound of abandonment while they were at that stage, right? So we'll talk about the different types of wounds. But to say that a certain wound occurs at a certain age, I think, is a little too limiting, okay? So our greatest need at this age is to belong. And that's also when you're forming this this thinking that it's us against them, right? That's when you start. And a lot of our sports are not collaborative sports. They're us against them. So we're reinforcing this belief, yes? An experience done by Piaget illustrates that in the fourth stage of development, a child is shown a ball, and one side of the ball is red, and so we'll take this crystal for example. This side of the crystal is red, and the other side is beige. Now, at this stage, the child is able to understand that you're seeing the beige side while I'm still looking at the red side. But before that, children under the age of 7 assume that if they're seeing red, you're seeing red as well. You're seeing the same thing they're seeing. From age 7 to 14, they're realizing that perspective, right? What you're seeing is different than what I'm seeing. So we're too young yet to put ourselves in their shoes, but we're starting to realize that we don't all see, feel, or hear the same things the same way as other people. So now, this is the stage 4, is also our heart opening, right? We're opening our heart and we're going to others with an open heart. Now, that being said, it's a significant step in consciousness as you pass from just from yourself to being part of something bigger. And the you versus them can become an issue if you're stuck at that stage. This is where racism and gangs operate from. Okay, so if you're wondering how does that look, well, that's how it looks, right? If you get stuck at us versus them, then you create your own little cliques, your own little group, and you're better than everybody, and you develop a whole belief system around that. We need to outgrow that, obviously, to move on to the next stage of evolution. At that stage, you learn what works and what doesn't work. So that's when you get detention. That's when you get discipline. You have to learn the rules, that there's rules for everything. And they, you know, as a child, you're like, another rule. And then you learn there's exceptions to the rule. And you realize the world's a lot, a bit more complicated than what you first thought, that you were the king of the world. Yes. And I would say that politically, you know, look at the Cold War, for example. It was the U.S. against the Soviet Union. And it was, you know, for some reason, someone had to be the bigger, the stronger, and the top of the pile. Yes. So hopefully we evolve past that. And we go towards the teachings of the Dalai Lama, which he says, stop looking at what differentiates you and start looking at what unites you instead. Right. What makes you part of the group instead of what isolates you from the group. A lot of our self-worth happens at this stage. So it's still an early stage, 7 to 14. And this stage is what's preparing us for all the changes we're about to experience as our hormones open, or we enter puberty, our body changes. It affects our identity. So if we're not having a strong self-worth between the age of 7 and 14, the next stage becomes really, really hard to go through because we don't have a solid foundation. We don't have a strong identity, and we are wobbling through this puberty with even more questions and more doubts about ourselves, which continues to amper us as we develop further, right? You know, some people never get past this stage until they realize that they can't keep doing what they were doing because they're miserable. And there's a lot of divorces because this is a time where you can, in order to fit in into all these rules, you're pretending to be something you're not. And the person you're marrying could also be pretending, right? I'm not saying you're the only culprit here, but because you're pretending to be something you're not, and then you're finally unable to continue living by pretending to be something you're not, you start wanting to be and asserting yourself. And that's when the other person goes, but wait a minute, that's not who I married. I don't want you to change. I want the person I fell in love with. And you're like, yeah, well, I'm not that person. And I fibbed my way through it to get married and to have children and have a family, just like society expected and wanting me to do. And it's not a big surprise because our society has moved away from building a strong foundation in our children from 7 to 14 and allowing them to be a part of the community. There's still a lot of rules, but they don't see how they fit in all these rules. They don't see how this society is accepting them as who they are. And you realize that you can't simply just accept things that were done the same way as they were forever, right? You need to realize that maybe things need to change, or how do I fit into this model? And maybe the model needs to be adjusted, right? And so at this point in my life, this is where I realized that I questioned a lot of the injustice that I was seeing, the manipulation, the control, the lies, the gossip. I started putting everything into question, which is a healthy development. Yeah, things that don't work need to be identified so they can be transformed and changed so they work. Yes. And so I lost my trust in the individual. I still was finding it very, very hard, even to this day, to trust people because I know what they're capable of. But this wound of trust comes from that far back. At the time, it left me very guarded, very suspicious, and also made it hard to interact with other people because I can't trust. So everything was just on a superficial basis. So if you're recognizing yourself in these different examples, there's things we can do to be able to heal that, right? I can't say that I'll just trust anybody, but I'm more open to trusting now because I realize where this comes from. So I'll take my time to get to know a person, but once I get to know them and I build trust in them, then I can open myself to that where I couldn't do that before. Now, stage 5 is 14 and up. So now we've gone past the physical development. You've gone through puberty at this stage, or you're going through puberty at this stage. Your mental development is complete. Physiologically, you have reached all these steps. So that's why the age doesn't matter beyond this point, because you have the ability and capability of thinking and reasoning and being emotional. At an adult stage. Now, your ability to do that will vary depending on how many wounds you suffered in the previous level of consciousness that occurred. So here, it's your reasoning that develops more. The reasoning goes from being able to accept concepts and ideas, the realm of probabilities, the imagination, the ability to think of things without them being concrete. This is a full glass of lemonade. What's going to happen when the glass is empty? We're able to say, well, the concept is I'm going to be drinking this. This take will this long. Do I need more? And we're able to plan and prepare ourselves, right? That you don't have the magical thought that there's another glass of lemonade that will appear on my desk if this one is empty. No, I have to get up and refill it. It's possible that I need to go to the store and buy more lemonade. And so we're able to start conceptualizing outside of just the present moment and anticipate our needs and do preparation. Yes. So in trying to fit this mold previously, we realized, well, maybe this mold needs to be changed, right? Maybe this mold is too constricting. I need more space. I need more freedom. This model that your parent expect you to be like, some people are being told, well, you're going to go to school and you're going to be a lawyer or you're going to be a doctor. And in this day and age, I find that so surprising and shocking. I'm like, well, what do you mean you have no say if what you're going to go to school in? They're like, no, well, if my parents are paying for it, I have to be a doctor or a lawyer. I'm like, okay, so what do you want to do? And they want to be a movie director or whatever. And I'm like, well, you can still be that. It just requires a sacrifice along the way, maybe a conversation. If nothing goes, then are you really going to go to university for 5-6 years to do something you have no interest in and think that eventually that's going to make you happy? That's not going to happen, right? So we need to be able to, at this stage, get out of what is established by others for us and create our own mold. based on our own belief and characteristics and gifts and talents, and within society's rules, still be able to be ourselves, right? I'm not saying become a criminal because you want to be rich. What I'm saying is, if you're realizing that you're going down a bus that's heading in the wrong direction that will lead to, for certain, your unhappiness, maybe it's time for you to just get off the bus. I'm not saying you don't get back on the bus, maybe you will, but maybe this is a good time for you to ask yourself, okay, so this bus going over there, what is that going to bring me? Because now you have the ability to think of what if. You're now finally able to do that reasoning and extrapolate that, well, I have no interest whatsoever. So what's my life going to look like going to work at the job that I hate every day? And a lot of our parents, elders, have gone through this, right? My father didn't have a choice to go to school. So he had the choice to work. But at the very least, he opposed his father, my grandfather, and went in a field of work that at least made him happy. And he spent his entire life in that field. And at the very least, it was something that he liked. But for us, given his experience, I was allowed to choose whatever I wanted to do. My father said, what's important is that when you get up in the morning and you go to work, you be happy. This freedom, this liberty of choice is an amazing gift to be given. Now realizing that not everyone gets this gift. And to be able to make my own choices based on what I like. And that doesn't mean that I made all the right choices, but it means that at least I had the liberty and the freedoms to actually make that decision for myself. So if you're unsupported at this stage, so adolescent years, right? The puberty stage, it can cause identity crisis and fear of failure. And this makes sense, right? Because you can't be yourself. You're not allowed to be who you are. So then the identity crisis stems from that, yes? And we should be spending that time learning to love ourselves. So if you're wondering, at what stage does that happen? The stage where you're transforming into an adult physically, emotionally, mentally, is the stage where you should love yourself. And yet we are bombarded with images from the media, that is social media or the written media, the news on the stands and those magazines telling us this is what's beautiful. And you're like, okay, so what, 2% of the world match this? But this is what you want me to look like in order for me to accept myself and to love myself. And we put unbelievable, unreasonable demands on ourselves, trying to match profiles that don't match us at all, as opposed to encouraging us to love ourselves and who we are and our true potential. Not being solely judged by our physical exterior, but judged by or evaluated on our abilities and our gifts and what makes us exceptional and unique. That's what should be happening at this stage, right? So your worldview changed to a more global vision. So in Carl Jung's Sturm, we are separating ourselves from family, from community and the nation, and trying to think of ourselves as, okay, who am I? And at least that's what's supposed to be happening, right? And you believe in theory, but you're not necessarily certain of where you fit on this stage, right? But you realize that you're no longer having to follow. You can create your own community. You can change community. You can't change your family, but you can interact with them differently because you're becoming more certain of who you are and developing yourself. So in order to move up from this stage, the stage 5, you require very high self-esteem and some courage. And because you need the courage to stand on your own path and follow your own path. Yes? It's a stage where you will want to be a part of the world in the sense that you want to correct an environmental problem. You're engaging in recycling and, you're reusing bags, which is, it's not bad. It does make an impact. And, we do have to change the way we do things on an individual standard in order to affect the world, right? If everybody stops using plastic bags, there will be no more plastic bags. But this is the stage where you realize that if you just keep cleaning the beach eventually gets dirty again. And you need to expand your world and make sure that people understand you can't throw garbage here anymore. This isn't a garbage dump. It's a river, or it's the side of the highway. And so you need to get more involved in re-educating others and stopping the pollution in the first place. These kind of thoughts is what's going to bring you to stage six. You go beyond your own group and you're more open to other ideas, other cultures, other religions, other philosophies. And it's no longer you versus them. It's more about, oh, how do I fit in this world with all these different philosophies and ideas and religions? This is also a great time to heal before you want to jump to the next stage. Why? Because each successive stage becomes more and more complex than the preceding one. And so imagine you're training for a marathon, and while you're training, you're hitting yourself. Okay, well, if you don't look after this injury and you keep running, then your muscles are weak and more prone to more severe injuries. And eventually, if you just keep pushing through because you really, really want to get to this marathon in Boston, well, eventually your injuries may prevent you from going and running at all. Even though you had all the right intentions of wanting to run this marathon, you didn't take care of your previous injuries. And so you're never going to make it there. This is the same idea. In order for you to advance on a higher consciousness level, you need to make sure that your foundation is solid. And so that's stage 1 to 5. The wounds become increasingly noticeable as you move to higher stages. It becomes really, really apparent. And so eventually, if you don't stop now, it will stop you anyway. Because you won't be able to understand this concept because you're missing the foundation blocks for it. And so before you can move further, it's better to make sure that your first 5 stages are firmly implemented, and that you take responsibility for your actions and your words and your choices, and you seek to repair the damages that you've done to either the environment, others, or yourself. Yes. So who will progress further? Well, honestly, everyone can progress further. However, it's easier for the spiritually mature if your parents or your teachers or the society has passed through these previous stages. Think of South Africa, for example, if you think of stages, right? When apartheid finally was abolished, there was a massive jump in rights and the way that things were done in Africa. But before that, even if they wanted to push further, they couldn't. This separation and this racist mentality was preventing the equality and the growth possible, right? So it depends on where you are in the world. And society is, you know, stuck in depending on where you are, stage 4, stage 5. So getting past that is difficult because you have to change the way you think. You have to stop thinking us versus them. You have to, you have to evolve. And the less evolved your environment is, the higher it is, the harder it is to move forward, because you don't have the tools and you don't have the access to the teachers that you need or the mentors that you need. But individuals who are born with natural spiritual gifts, probably developed in previous lives or have been exposed to higher stage of consciousness with different teachers and different environment, well, it'll be easier for them. I agree. But it still will require them to have a desire to grow and have courage to move higher stages. That being said, more people are now who are experiencing breakdown, midlife crisis, burnout, are looking for answers. They're looking for different answers, and they're looking for and more options. As these people are looking for more answers, more options are opening up. They're learning about self-help books, and then there was meditations, then there was yoga, and then there was retreats, and there's an ability to connect with other philosophies and changing our perspective by learning how other people in different parts of the world are living, right? We're not so isolated anymore. Now, is an emotion a wound? No. You can go through several range of emotion through all these entire stages. They won't necessarily cause you a severe wounding that's going to cripple you from moving to a higher state of consciousness. And is the wound really necessary? Well, without the wound, you are living completely oblivious to the rest of the world, and there's nothing moving you forward. There's nothing propelling you to a different desire to improve and to grow. And are you the only one suffering? No, absolutely not. Because everyone has at least one wound, if not more. No matter how idyllic your life was, there was something that will bring about questioning your validity, your system that you're living in. It's interesting because when you're living and you're not realizing that the others are suffering, you don't see the issues, right? But at one point, we'll just take the abolition of slavery. Well, a certain amount of people realize that, okay, these are human beings. We're treating them like animals. We can't do that. This needs to change. There was a lot of resistance, but these people realize this needs to change. They shouldn't be treated this way, right? There comes a time that even if your life is idyllic, you see the suffering in others, and that makes you question your way of living and the way of things working. Yes, and that's when laws are being put into place. That's when segregation stops. That's when Human Rights Commission was created. When the UNICEF was created, and United Nations have established rules to respect people. Then you can no longer look at an individual and say you're a savage. Then this is my culture. This is the way I live. You need to honor and respect that. Right? It required a lot of growth society-wise in order to get there, and we're not quite there yet. We're just making progress in that direction. So, but I personally, I still have to meet a person whose grass is actually greener than mine. When you start to know their details and their history and all the masks that they're hiding behind and all the facade that they've put to, you know, look good through their neighbors, when they finally show their true self, they're showing their humanity. They're showing that they're wounded. And my job is not to make the wound worse, but it's to make you realize that you don't have to continue living as a facade and wearing a mask. It's that you can heal that wound and you'll be perfectly safe by being who you are and by being yourself. So how does an unhealed trauma wound can present as? Well, you can have a low self-worth, you can be in codependency, you'll have several fears that could be ranging from abandonment to, there's so many phobias, it's unbelievable, right? They stem from somewhere. You're putting your needs aside for other people, you're craving external validation, meaning that other people need to tell you you're good, other people need to tell you you're brilliant because you can't see that for yourself. You're unable to tolerate conflict, or so you're being overly agreeable. You could have a feeling of shame. You could be resisting positive change. I've heard this said to me one time, the better the devil you know than the one you don't. I'm like, well, I know it's the devil, so I'll walk away from that, and I will hopefully have a solid enough foundation so that when I face something, other situation, I can handle it better. But I can recognize this isn't a good situation for me, so I'll get out of that. Because, you know, could be worse, but maybe, now that I recognize what's bad for me, I won't put myself in the same similar situation again. But if you have an unhealed trauma wound, you might not be able to do that. So anxiety, depression, addictions, panic attack, nightmares, wetting the bed, extreme fatigue, pain, getting angry easily, any mental diagnosis, they stem from somewhere. So we need to find the root cause of these trauma, which could be rejection, abandonment, betrayal, injustice, guilt, trust, lack of trust or trust being betrayed, neglect, humiliation, isolation, shame of intimacy or shame of our bodies, right? Those are all traumas that can be collected through our lifetime at varying degrees, right? So your fear of abandonment can be this big, whereas mine was this big, right? It's not a judgment. It's not a calibration or, you know, no one's the winner or the loser here. However, if you've experienced these traumas at one level or another, it's time for you to look at these traumas and start healing them. Now, during my research, someone says the dark side of the dark night of the soul is a trauma wound, because it's not. That's when it's the accumulation of your wounds, breaking down your foundation. And so you're in free fall. It's your soul saying, okay, listen, we're not going any further until you deal with this. That's when you get the burnouts. That's when you get the midlife crisis. That's when you realize, I'm still not happy. I have a job. And this, I mean, could be different now, but when I was growing up, if you had a job, if you were married, if you had kids, if you had a big car, if you had a big TV, you made it, right? You should be happy because you had everything, right? And then it's your soul realizing, or the part of you realizing, yeah, that doesn't make me happy. So what makes me happy then? And we have to put ourselves in the question, and we have to do some introspection. And that's what the dark night of the soul is. And this can last from 12 hours to 12 years, right? There's no time until you do the introspection, until you do the analysis, until you do your little hermitage and spend time with yourself. You can't go any further. So you're stuck in the darkness. It's not a nice place to be. I've been there a few times and I didn't particularly enjoy these moments. However, they're usually precursor to an immense breakthrough. So if you're in one of those, these moments of severe depression, or you can't go to work and you can't get anything accomplished, you're completely sad and overwhelmed, there's light at the end of the tunnel. The tunnel doesn't go endlessly over and over. It does end. However, it will end once you start looking at yourself, right? When you start looking at your history, when you start putting things in perspective, when you start leaving your victim mode of fear, desire, anger, entitlement, and pride, and you go to an empowered mode where you find courage and reason and acceptance and wisdom and love and all types of love, universal love, unconditional love, right? Which is where the compassion is, which is where the mercy is. Yes. So the stage of transformation, right? You have to pass from surviving. If you're still in survival mode, you're not going to be able to move any further. You need to be able to have your health and your physical need met through nutrition, financial stability. You need to make sure you have a roof over your head. These are the basic needs. And if these haven't been met yet, then you have to go back and meet those needs. Then you need to find safety, belonging, that is true friendship or family or community. Because that will then allow you the comfort to explore discernment and determining, recognizing your own self and managing your self-esteem and build your confidence. That allows you to be able to be free and autonomous, but also accountable, right? You also take responsibility at this stage. And that's when personal growth really takes place. The personal growth leads to self-actualization, which means that you can trust, you can be creative, you have integrity, authenticity, you have meaning. Your life has meaning, right? You have found what gives you the drive to go on every day. Then there's the stage of integrating you into the larger world through collaboration and mentoring and partnering and making alliances. To become of service, which is the ultimate goal, right? And to be of service, you need to have a lot of compassion, humility, and contrition, and also learn all about forgiveness, which takes us to the stage 6 to 12. Now, I don't know if I have time today to go through all these stages, but what's important is the first part that I just finished. But the next stage is a transpersonal stage. So you get outside of the human experience more into a spiritual experience. And It is through that that you find your union with Creator, God, Universe, Gaia. Call it whatever you want. The name's not really important. I never get stuck on the name. But at this point in stage six, you evolve and it's no longer about you. So remember when I said the stage of transformation, there's a part of you that becomes of service. So you realize that the world isn't there for you. You're there for the world. And you realize that your talent, your gifts, your abilities, they are a gift to the community, to the world at large. And so it's your contribution that makes the world a better place. And then you realize you must be part of the world, because without you, it's missing gear. It's not turning right. So we, by stage six, individuals are committed towards service. And there's such a thing as the contribution that you're given to the world is that you're realizing your true potential and achieving your ideal self. So you're no longer impeded by the victim. You're now empowered and you have achieved your ideal self. Gives you a sense of being content and feeling fulfilled. So that's when you finally get it, right? It's not about possession. It's not about money. It's not about prestige. It's about you as a person feeling happy. So that starts at stage six. And then there's a certain sacrifice that happens. Now, I know a lot of people do YouTube videos and things and they make a lot of money. I don't. But I believe that my message, even though I'm not a big star, is still important and it's my contribution. So I spent actually quite a bit of that time researching, preparing, and then posting these videos. They're not for me because I've already know this stuff. They're my contribution, my ability to share with the world and saying, well, if you're stuck somewhere, maybe we can work together. We can get there. The sacrifices, you know, I'm not playing games right now. I'm not doing something else. I'm investing my time and my knowledge and my sharing with you guys. Sacrifice, we think, has to be, there's got to be a cost to it. Otherwise, it's not a sacrifice. But the sacrifice doesn't need to be blood and tears. I'm happy to be sharing this with you. So my sacrifice is, instead of doing something that, you know, brought me money, I'm doing this instead because I believe in what I'm doing. So I think I'd have to find another word than sacrifice, but I think a better word would be your gift of yourself to the world. If you see it that way, then there's less, I don't know, fighting back. You're like, I don't want to sacrifice myself, don't want to kill myself. But if you change the word sacrifice for the gift of yourself, right? What do you have to give? What do you have to contribute? What can you bring to this world that makes a world a better place? And you'd be surprised. It doesn't have to be big things. It could be everyday little things. But just that extra effort in being kind, in being smiling, acknowledging someone, right? Taking the time to listen. These are all parts of you making the world a better place. So this is a stage where you are going to connect with your inner wisdom, where you're going to have developed enough knowledge about yourself, your talents, your gifts, and your abilities that you're able to be wise about it. So you need more time alone. And this is something that I've noticed. I love you guys a lot. I love spending time with you guys. But then there's a time where I need to go back in and say, okay, how did I handle this? Was this the best way I could have handled that? Can I improve? Can I be better? What did I learn from this, right? Taking the time to analyze and be observing of the situation. Now, we're moving into the difficulty of this stage is that for some people, they will have existential crisis, either a depression or an anxiety or decide, you know what, this is too much for me, and I'll forget
I forget about this. You know, this is requiring too much work. And that's when you get stuck, right? There's no one that needs and requires to be stuck. Sometimes it's okay to take a step back and then finding the help and the support you need in order to be able to move forward, right? And that's the key. Doing all this alone is time consuming, it's lonely, and it's hard to do. But being able to do this with the help of somebody, some guidance, a mentor, or starting somewhere is what's going to get you moving again, right? I think that mystics and seers and sage and the Western traditions and transcendental stage of consciousness, they are being guided. They don't achieve all this alone. In what you're trying to accomplish is you're trying to free yourself from the fear of death, of shame, of guilt, of apathy, of grief, of fear, of desire, of anger, of pride. Now, this is starting to look a lot like the seven sins. Now, do you see why this is always intertwined and interlocked with each other? Because these things are not bringing you joy. They're not bringing love into your life. But when you find the courage to rise, you will find your willingness and your acceptance, because you realize you're worthy and you've gained purpose and appreciation for yourself, and you develop a sense of purpose that helps you act with meaning and passion. And this is where all these midlife crisis things are. You know, you don't find the meaning or the purpose of what you're doing. You just, you know, go to work, earn money, go to sleep, go to work, earn money, go to sleep. And then once in a while, you go out with your friends, and that can't be what life's about, because it doesn't have any meaning. But when you free yourself with love, forgiveness, and compassion, and those open your mind to a new consciousness. Just like in the mystery schools, this is a second stage of development that's allowing you to experience synchronicity, to be guided through the events that lead you from pain and misery to divine love, divine will, and divine wisdom. Your inner self blossom, and you see the joy and the peace filling this great void, and ultimately divine grace can fill your body. Now, if you're allowed to get to this stage and discover this, you start heading in towards stage 7, where you're being a part of the everything. Now, this can be overwhelming for people, because I've had some people say, I feel the pain of these people suffering. And so, how do you not feel their pain? It's difficult to explain, but I realize there is suffering, so I try to do what I can to ease that suffering. Doesn't mean that if I let myself be inundated by their pain, then I'm stunned. I can't do anything because I'm suffering just as they are. So I have to find what's inside of me that can change and transform that situation. This is a stage where stage 7 is that you feel connected to absolutely everything. The mountains, the birds, the grass. So not just other human beings, but living things. You're reaching a stage of great awareness. Jane Redfield teaches about this in his experimental guide, and teaches you how to begin to live with the rhythm of the soul and the spirit. It's when life starts to move and you realize that you don't go against the current, you're just floating with the current, and things happen faster because you align with everything that surrounds you, and you're more in touch with the environment, that as much as the living human community than everything else that surrounds you. So it's a very psychic stage where you are open and are gaining access to information, like energies and things like that, that allows you to grow and expand. This is also where you'll
have some people who have spiritual egos, their spiritual ego will pop out. Then they could be false spiritual channeling. They think that they're talking to God or from God. And you'll meet all kinds of different people. But if you stay connected, usually, remember Jesus said it's the quiet voice inside. So it's not the little person on a soapbox screaming their messages, right? This will lead you to a union with God. And you'll see the world that there is a deity or a God or mysticism. And at this stage, you experience the manifest of God, which is the universal love. And this is the realm of Christ and Buddha. But also, I want to say that, because we only have 5 minutes left, eventually you evolve to grow into the union and realizing that you're just space. It's a feeling that I was able to experiment through ayahuasca, and being able to crack open my limitation and attain the stage. And it's really tough to hold on to that stage because you have to come back and pay your bills and you have to come back and go to work. And that requires a certain attachment to function in the third dimension. However, knowing that that exists, knowing having this ability to perceive and pierce through this blocking of your mind and expand beyond that and connecting to that makes you change the way you feel and see about things, right? So this goes on to the 12 other levels, and I don't have time to address the rest of them tonight because they require more explanation as we go because they're more complicated. However, Buddha was able, said to be able to have clairvoyance, clairaudience, astral travel, and travel with the physical body to other realms. He had telekinesis, and he could move himself, float, or, you know, hover, transforming, then the ability to replicate its own body in a different location, penetrating other people's mind through telepathy and reading their mind, and passing through solid objects that was walking on water or diving into the earth like it was water, and expand to touching the moon and the sun with their fingers, becoming invisible, and also recollecting other people's lives, their own past lives and other people's lives. This is when you achieve a high level of consciousness and you realize that all the information, it's outside of time, it's outside of space, it just simply exists and you can just tap into it. These are the possibilities that Buddha, the mental teacher, were trying to teach us. And if I just go into that, that alone would be one or maybe two podcasts. But Buddha was the mental teacher and Jesus was the love teacher. Either case, we have to let go of our fears. We have to deal with our personal and collective karma. And sometimes karma takes more than one lifetime to resolve because it's like a ripening fruit. So you need the right rain, sun, and nutrients and season to ripen. So, you know, it may take a while before you can deal with everything you've created. However, pure consciousness can be attained and your suffering can end. And that's when you can enter nirvana. So I want to finish this video by saying I rushed through the last bit. But if this is of interest to you, if you are looking for a way to heal those wounds that you've collected, here at the Redo Wellness Center, we do have the retreats that we're hosting here in Drumheller, Alberta. And the information is on our website at www.sonyaroy.com. All the information is there about the retreats. We have a fantastic sanctuary that you can come to and go through the exercises to not simply identify the wound, but also finding a way to heal those wounds. And then we go through the 12 stages in detail and we help you transform this pain into joy, love, and happiness. If some of you are curious about how you apply these concepts to your personal life, I also have my book, I Dragon, The Biography of a Spiritual Transformation, which explains the entire process on how I applied all this knowledge in order to transform my life to a happy place.
And I would like all of you to be able to enjoy that. The book is available on Amazon, every market in the world. So that's not an issue. You can get it wherever you want.